if I'd remained a historian, I'd been trained as a historian, I'd done a history at Evelyn and so on, and the normal course would have been for me to get a job in history and become a don and write books about English history and things. Instead, in 1968, I went to Nepal and spent 15 months studying a Gurung village in central Nepal. Then I came back and finished off a PhD in anthropology. And then we did the Earlscombe study, and it was looking at it through the eyes of both an English person but also someone who had actually lived in a peasant village and seen what peasants really were in the Himalayas, then came back, and all this was strange. It was the effect of anthropology, makes the natural unnatural, the normal abnormal, the everyday into something strange. And that gave me the jolt. So when we studied Earlscombe, we suddenly discovered that it wasn't what I would have assumed as a historian, which is that it was just a peasant village and then changed into a modern industrial village. So the revolution in my mind in 1977, when I wrote Individualism, couldn't have happened if I'd remained just an English historian. And this is one of the reasons I saw things which my colleagues, who were many of them more intelligent and better trained and so on, couldn't see. This is a very general feature of academic life, that it's, as Einstein said, I am not more intelligent than other people, I am just passionately curious. Discoveries are not made because you're cleverer, but by chance, and often it's the chance of having some sudden dislocation or shake in your life which suddenly puts things into a new perspective. For instance, going to China was a necessary step in my understanding of Japan. If I hadn't been to China for a number of times, I could never have written the book I've just written on Japan. And going to Nepal, therefore, was necessary for going to writing about England. Writing and understanding England was necessary to begin to understand China and Japan. Because you can't proceed to making intellectual breakthroughs by sheer rational, logical, step-by-step thought, as you can in physics and things like this. It requires an imaginative and emotional change in your own personality. So you suddenly see things as Galileo did. Galileo's breakthrough occurred when he saw the same pendulum swinging, but it looked different to him. This is what's known as a paradigm shift. The paradigm shift which Sarah and I believe we made in our study of Earlscombe and of the English, what some people described as the Einsteinian shift, was not because we were cleverer or more hardworking than many of my friends and colleagues, but by the effort of going to abroad, studying anthropology, and then coming back again.